Well, as we continue looking at the book of Genesis, we're continuing to follow Abraham's life as he interacts with God and with the others around him. And last week we saw someone else that seemed at the time to be a better example than him. And tonight again we look at some things in his life that are still problems. Even though he's God's chosen one, God's chosen Abraham to be the one through whom the Messiah is going to come, that's going to bless all the nations of the world. But Abraham is still having some struggles. He's still human. Now, one of the amazing things about the Bible, one of the evidences that it's written from an impartial point of view, is that if someone writes a story of their life, for example, well, they'll often leave out all the bad things. They just put the good things that they did in there. On the other hand, if someone else who doesn't like that person writes the story of their life, they tell all the bad things and leave out a lot of the good things to try to paint a negative picture of that person. But you know, God's impartial. He doesn't care whether it makes you happy or not. He's going to put the truth in there. And so it is with Abraham. He tells the good and he tells the bad. And it's a wonderful thing for us, because how sad it would be for us, what a struggle it would be for us, if all of the people described in the Bible had only the good things about them told, and we were under the impression that they were just perfect people. And we would feel unable to keep up with them. But I know I, for one, am glad that the good and the bad are both there. It shows us how God can take and use even someone's weaknesses, even their mistakes, even their sin, and God can still make good come out of it. That's how powerful and how amazing the God that we serve is. As we look into Genesis chapter 21, we find God shown and painted as a God who keeps His promises. Even if they're not on our time schedules, He keeps His promises. Verse 1 says, "The Lord visited Sarah as He had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as He had spoken." And we look to verse 2, it says, "For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him." God works in His own time, on His own schedule, and He does what He says He'll do, and He does it when He says He'll do it. And we don't have a whole lot of control over that. We can't bribe Him into speeding it up or slowing it down or changing it from what He's going to do. Pardon me. He has the ultimate control of this universe, and He will not be swayed by others. It's an amazing thing. This God that we serve is so dependable. We can count on Him. He is so perfect. He is so just. He is so holy. He is so everything that He is, to the nth degree, perfectly in everything that He does. In fact, so much so that the Bible tells us that God cannot lie, and that God cannot sin, neither does He tempt anyone else to sin, neither can He be tempted with sin. That's how perfect He is. And it's a good thing that He is so. When I think about some of the Greek and Roman myths that I studied in world literature, I don't know if you studied those things when you were in school or not, but I thought, what a depressing group of gods these people worshipped. Their gods were no better than they were. They had the same immoral flings with others. They had the same jealousies and the same envies. They treated people dirty. They tricked people and lied to people. Why would you want to serve and worship gods like that? Fortunately for us, the real, true, and living God is not like those false gods. He is a God of His Word, a God of His promises, and we can depend on it. Well, Isaac is named. His name means laughter, one who laughs. And of course, we know what a fitting name that is for him. Sarah had laughed in the tent. Abraham had laughed when the Lord told him. And so when the child finally is born, he's given the name Laughter. As far as we know, remember back to the covenant of circumcision that God put in place. As far as we know, Isaac is the first one born in Abraham's household that circumcised on the eighth day as God had commanded it. Abraham and Ishmael, certainly, they were circumcised, but Abraham was an old man and Ishmael was already over 10 years old by the time he was circumcised. It's possible that there may have been others born in the household that may have been circumcised, but Isaac's the first one that we have a record of. And certainly he is the first one who is going to continue the covenant that God made with Abraham. Abraham, 100 years old. Sarah, 90. Ishmael's already 14 years old by the time that Isaac is born. Remember that Ishmael was born when Abraham was only 86. So here he is, some 13 or 14 years later. And he's now a teenager. Well, the laughter, Sarah says, all who hear will laugh with me. The laughter has turned, in her mind at least, from a mocking laughter of disbelief and not thinking that it could happen, to a laughter of joy and happiness. And that's one of the things that God can do for us. He can turn our pain into pleasure. He can turn our sorrow into joy. He can change our life and turn it around. He can change our destination from destruction to life. Sarah asked the question in verse number 7. Who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should give him children in his old age? Who would have said that? Well, certainly no human being. If there were gamblers at that time, the odds on that would have been astronomical. You could have gotten a really good bet on that one because there was just no chance. That's just not going to happen. And yet, there was one who said it was going to happen. Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah was going to give him a child in his old age? The Lord. The Lord would say that, and the Lord did say that. He promised it. When no one else could have even imagined it happening, the Lord was assured that it would happen. He was certain of it. There was no doubt because He was making it happen. And you know, even though God is not in the business of working in miraculous ways like He did at that time, we need to understand that here we are today, sometimes the things that we cannot imagine, God is going to do. We need to have faith in Him and trust Him that He can do things that truly are above all that we ask or think or even imagine. He can do it. He doesn't always do it, but He can, and sometimes, even without miracles, He still does things that are beyond all that we could imagine. Well, as we look now at Hagar and Ishmael and their relationship with Sarah and Isaac, not a pleasant household to live in with these rivals for Abraham's devotion still living there in the same home together. and one being the servant of the other. What an awkward situation that must have been. And as Isaac grew and finally was weaned, Abraham had a great feast. That was something to celebrate. You know, it's an amazing thing. When we think of weaning, we think of a little baby that stopped nursing. But oftentimes in the Scriptures, the term weaning doesn't just refer to someone who stopped nursing. The term weaning has to do with someone who's able to feed themselves and clothe themselves and kind of take care of themselves a little bit. So an older child, perhaps 6, 7, or even 8 years old, is often referred to. Sometimes we think about Samuel, for example. His mother, after she had weaned him, she brought him to the temple for Eli to take under his wing and to raise. I kind of doubt that she brought a 1 or 2 year old to Eli. She brought him someone who was old enough to take care of himself and to be of a help to Eli. Someone old enough to dress himself and feed himself. It wouldn't have been much of a gift if she had brought Eli a baby that he was going to have to raise for the next 6 or 7 years. And so the possibility here, we don't know for sure how old Isaac was at this time, but he could well have been a 6, 7, or even 8 year old child by the time Abraham has this party, a coming out party, if you will, for the little fella. And so Ishmael, his half-brother, could have been anywhere from at least 16 or so on up to maybe a 20 or 21-year-old young man by this time. And yet, it says that Ishmael was making fun of him. He was mocking Isaac. And Sarah saw that. And Sarah didn't like that at all, because she knew that was her baby that he was making fun of. And of course, a mother is often very protective of her young. And so Sarah told Abraham to get rid of those two, Hagar and Ishmael. Get them out of here. She doesn't want her servant's son to be on equal terms with her son. Doesn't want him to be equal heirs of Abraham's inheritance with her son. And of course, she has the son of the promise, the son of the covenant that God had made with Abraham. And so Abraham, even though he doesn't seem to be as concerned about Hagar as he is about his son Ishmael, it troubles him that he has to do this. Apparently, there was no continuation of the intimate relationship that Hagar and Abraham had had. Once she was with child with Ishmael, they didn't continue any further in their relationship. So Abraham apparently has been with Sarah and remained faithful to her from that time on. He's not feeling like he's losing a wife here, but he is concerned about that son. That is his son. That's his flesh and blood. And Sarah's telling him, get rid of him too. And that hurt him. It troubled him. You know, it is amazing that here we are, some 15 to 20 years later, and that sinful action that was Sarah's idea in the first place even, she was the one that brought Hagar to Abraham. And yet that sinful action, still 15 to 20 years in the future, is still causing problems in their family. You know, that's often the case with sin. Sometimes we think, well, I did some bad things, but I stopped. I didn't do it anymore. I've quit doing that. That doesn't mean that the sin, the pain of that sin won't continue on for years to come. I think about those who perhaps got involved with a mind-altering drug like LSD. Well, maybe they quit. Maybe they only did it one time. But still, they may be having those flashbacks. It may still cause some mental problems as a result of that, even after they've quit. I think about young people who go out there and they live a promiscuous lifestyle and they contract some sexually transmitted disease. And they may quit living that immoral lifestyle. But that disease may have ramifications for them for the rest of their life. Some young women become sterile and unable to give birth because of those things. It's a sad situation, but sin often causes pain so much longer than the pleasure that that sin may have brought for the season. We need to realize that and avoid sin for that reason, as well as many others, of course. But what a painful thing sin is. In verse 12, God confirms for Abraham that what Sarah has told him to do is okay. What a shame Abraham didn't ask God's opinion the first time around when Sarah suggested him having the child with Hagar. He didn't ask God's opinion then. He didn't listen to what God had to say at that time. But now he's listening a little better. God explains again that Isaac is the descendant that he's chosen. Isaac is the one, the seed. The promise is going to flow through him. The covenant is through him. But God assures Abraham that he is going to take care of Ishmael because he's Abraham's son. We talked this morning in class in the book of Proverbs about how sometimes people receive benefits from God because of someone else's righteousness. Sometimes we suffer pain because of someone else's sins, but sometimes we enjoy benefits because of someone else's righteousness. And I think about that with Abraham and with Ishmael. Because Abraham is God's beloved, because he's God's friend, because he's God's servant, then Ishmael is going to be cared for. And God will watch out for him and build him into a great nation. Well, Abraham gives them some provisions and sends them off. And Hagar doesn't go anywhere in particular. She didn't go back home. Don't know if she had a home. Don't know what became of her family. But she didn't head off to Egypt. She was an Egyptian. She didn't go to try to find another job somewhere else to be somebody else's servant. She just kind of wanders around out in the wilderness. You can imagine why. She's probably in shock. Here is a woman who yesterday, she had a job. All her needs were provided for. Her son's needs were all being provided for. Her son, in fact, was an heir to great wealth. I mean, Abraham had hundreds of servants and cattle and all, sheep and all of these things and all this wealth. And even if Ishmael only got a small portion of that, they had something to look forward to. Yet today, here she is, wandering out in the wilderness with a bottle of water and a loaf of bread. Nowhere to live, no future, no employment. Life hits hard sometimes. It hits all of us from time to time. Maybe not quite in the way it hit Hagar, but life hits hard. We need to remember that God is still there, even in those difficult times. And remember, God had promised that He would take care of Ishmael. Well, the water ran out, the bread was gone, and she put the child, it says, he was a big child by this time, we read that, and we think, she put the child, and we think, well, you know, a little child. We maybe think of somebody Morgan's age, or maybe Joseph's age, a little 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, we think of a child. Well, this fellow was a teenager. And she put him off under the bush, and then she went an arrow's shot away. And she was weeping. She said, I don't want to see him die. We're out of water. We're out here in the desert. Nowhere to go. Nothing to do. No one to save us. And despair set in. And she wept. Well, God didn't necessarily listen to her voice crying, but He did hear the lad weeping. And so He comes to Hagar and He says, "What's wrong?" And He said, "What's your trouble? Don't be afraid. God has heard the lad weeping where he is. He's heard his voice. So go pick him up. Hold him in your hand. I am going to make him a great nation." The Lord keeps His promises. Even to the outcast, He still keeps His promises. He's still protecting Hagar and Ishmael. And in this case, instead of the son being protected because of who the father is, in this case, the mother is getting some benefits because of who the son is. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the bottle of water up, and she gave him some water to drink. It's amazing sometimes how our pain and our despair can blind us to the things that are right there in front of us. And I know that God doesn't miraculously open our eyes like He did Hagar's, but sometimes we just need a smack on the back of the head to say, "Hey, look around, open your eyes, see what's going on." If she'd have looked around, she could have seen that well of water that was there. But she was so focused on her pain and her suffering that she couldn't see any way out. She couldn't see the way of deliverance. Sometimes we get ourselves in that situation where we're so wrapped up in the problems of life and the struggles that we're having, that we aren't really looking for a way out. We've given up. We've just figured this is it. There's no point even trying. I'm just going to lay the lad over under the bush and I'm going to go over here and we're going to die. And I just don't want to see it happen. And sometimes we're reminded, don't give up. Keep looking. Keep going. Keep plugging along. It can get better tomorrow. It can be a new day. And so it was that God was with the lad. It's interesting, in this entire chapter, Ishmael is never mentioned by name. He's the child, he's the lad, he's her son. He's never mentioned by his given name in this entire chapter here. But God was with him and he grew. And he became an archer. And he dwelt in the wilderness. And his mother went and got him a wife from Egypt. Things got better. It wasn't the end of the road that they thought it was going to be when they thought they were going to die there in the wilderness. And you know, we look at this. Here's Hagar and Ishmael. And why does the Bible spend so much time on these two? Why is there so much about Hagar and Ishmael and Sarah and Isaac? And why didn't it just tell us about Sarah and Isaac? Well, I think there are probably a number of reasons for that. One is that God is trying to paint a clear picture of who the chosen one is. There's a lot of confusion in the world today about that. The Muslim world claims that Ishmael was the son of promise and he's the one, and that they're descendants from him. And so they're the ones that are God's favored people. And of course, the Jews see that Isaac is the promised one. But what we realize as Christians is that even though Isaac was the son that God promised Abraham and Sarah, Isaac is not the seed that God promised that all nations shall be blessed in you and in your seed. That's not Isaac. That was yet to come. That was a descendant further down the line. The book of Galatians spends a good deal of time reviewing these things. It's amazing. We talked about Melchizedek a few weeks ago and how that little unknown character that just showed up for a couple of verses became such a huge part of what our New Testament Christianity is all about, with Christ as our high priest. Well, in Galatians chapter 4, Paul uses Abraham and his two sons, Isaac and Ishmael, and his two women, Sarah and Hagar, and he paints an allegory for us. He paints an illustration for us to explain the difference between the old law and the new law. In Galatians chapter 4, between verses 21 and 31, he paints that picture, and he compares Hagar and Ishmael to the old law, the physical law. But he talks about Sarah and Isaac, and he talks about the spiritual law and the spiritual blessings that come from God. He compares Hagar to Mount Sinai, where the law of Moses that brought death and condemnation was delivered. And he compares Sarah to Jerusalem and Mount Zion, where the gospel truth of life and freedom proceeded from. And it's an amazing thing. He says, Hagar is like the Sinai in Arabia and answers to the physical Jerusalem, which now is and is in bondage with her children. But the Jerusalem which is above is free, which is the mother of us all. And he says, brethren, just like Isaac was, we are the children of promise. But just then, just as then the one that was born after the flesh persecuted the one who was born after the Spirit, even so it is now. He even draws back to this time when Ishmael was mocking and irritating and pestering Isaac. And he says, you know, when we're spiritual children of God, the physical children of this world are going to bother us. They're going to persecute us. They're going to give us trouble. But we can overcome it, just as Isaac overcame that difficulty. Well, the rest of chapter 21 of Genesis paints a picture of a covenant that Abraham makes with Abimelech. Yes, Abimelech again. And Abimelech really again points out to us how someone can be a good individual, a good, moral, upstanding person. Abimelech comes to talk to Abraham, and Abimelech is the king of the Philistines at this time. You're probably familiar with the Philistines. We remember David and Goliath, and Goliath was one of those Philistines. But at this time, Abimelech wants to make a covenant with Abraham, a non-aggression treaty of sorts. He wants to make sure that they're friendly toward each other. And he says, I've seen that God is with you in all you do. Is that evident to others around us? When people look at us, can they see that God's with us in all we do? Maybe I'm asking the wrong question. Maybe we should be asking the question, is God with us in all we do? He is if we're doing what He wants us to do. He's with us. If we're being obedient to Him, He's with us. But if we're not living up to His standards, then maybe He's not with us in all we do. But He says, now swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me. I can't imagine why he would think Abraham would do a thing like that. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. But he says, you swear to me that you're not gonna be deceitful toward me, or my son, nor my son's son, but according to the kindness that I have done to you, you do it to me, and to the land that where you've sojourn. And Abraham said, I'll swear to that. I'll do that. You know, it's an amazing thing. What a shame it is that that relationship with this seemingly good man Abimelech, shame that he couldn't have continued to have an influence over those Philistine people so that they could have been more godly than they became. And it's a shame that that relationship that he and Abraham had and the covenant that they had between them, it's a shame that that couldn't have continued on down through the generations. But you know, children don't always do what their parents would have done. Grandchildren don't do what their grandparents would have done. And sometimes 3 or 4 generations down the road, they don't even know who their ancestors were. I know that happens because I know it's happened in my own family. I know my parents. I knew my grandparents. But I don't even know who my great-grandparents were. I don't even know what their names were. That's just 3 generations back. It's an amazing thing how quickly time passes on and we forget. And so by the time the children of Israel come back to the land of Canaan, the Philistines by that time and whoever their king was at that time probably didn't even know who Abimelech was or who Abraham was or anything about this covenant that had taken place. But Abraham got onto Abimelech because he had dug a well of water and some of Abimelech's servants had violently taken it away from him. And Abimelech says, I didn't know anything about that. Never heard of it. In fact, you're telling me now, this is the first I've ever heard of it. I would have never let that happen if I had known that was going on. And so Abraham took some sheep and some oxen and gave them to Abimelech and they made the covenant. And Abraham took 7 ewe lambs from the flock and put them by themselves. And Abimelech said, well, what's this? What are these for? And Abraham said, these are a witness that I dug this well. That way, if anybody comes fight and wants to take this well, you've got these sheep to remind you, I dug this well. This is my well. And Abraham named this place Beersheba, which means well of the oath. And that's what it was called for years and years to come. In fact, it's interesting, it was actually referred to as that back in verse 14 when Hagar was wandering in the wilderness of Beersheba before Abraham named it Beersheba. But by the time Moses was writing this, it was well known and well established as Beersheba. And in fact, Beersheba is known as one of the southern borders of the area of Judah. When the Bible will talk about from Dan to Beersheba. Dan was the northernmost point, the northernmost tribe, and Beersheba was the southernmost city and the southernmost point of the nation of Israel. And so it was, they made that covenant. Abimelech went back to the land of the Philistines, and Abraham planted a grove of trees there and called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned in the Philistines' land many days. You know, all of us are sojourning in the Philistines' land, so to speak. We're living here in this world with all of these who aren't God's people all around us. What are we doing? Are we living at peace? Are we doing our best to keep the peace and yet at the same time are we being a good influence? Are we dealing deceitfully with them as Abraham had done to Abimelech? Can they see that God is with us in all we're doing? Are we living that kind of life? Are we the city set on the hill? Are we the light that can't be hidden, shining our lights for Jesus every day? Are we doing that in this land of the Philistines that we live in? Or are we not? Perhaps we're quite on the other side of the picture. Maybe we've joined with the Philistines. Maybe we've done like Hagar and Ishmael and we've gone and married Egyptians. What are we doing? How are we living our life? If you have a need tonight to come back more strongly to God, to trust in the God who keeps His Word, to depend on Him, to be separate from the Philistines, even though we're living in their land, and to call on the name of the Lord as Abraham did, to worship Him and love Him, to pray to Him and speak to Him daily, have the kind of relationship with Him that Abraham did. Abraham was called the friend of God. Do we have that kind of relationship with God tonight? If we have a need to respond to the invitation, it's always open, but at this time, of course, it's especially offered. Please come as we stand and as we sing.